Blog Talk Radio.
There's a battle to win. Nations have dropped from 16 to 12 to 8. Now it's down to the championship four at Homestead Miami Speedway. The stage is set. The stakes are high. The glory will live forever. It's time! The NASCAR Sprint Cup Series Championship Ford EcoBoost 400. November 22nd. Go to homesteadmiamispeedway.com for tickets. Only one will rise.
Good evening, everybody, from Pit Stop Radio with Tim Despain. I'm your host, Stephen Wilson. Tim's got the night off here. He's feeling a little bit under the weather, and first and foremost, I'd like to hope that he gets better out here. Got a lot to talk about tonight with Martinsville this past weekend with the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series and NASCAR Sprint Cup Series both out there to start their round of eight in the Sprint Cup Series and round of six there with the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series for their first round there. We've got Camping World Truck Series, NASCAR Xfinity Series, and Sprint Cup Series from Texas Motor Speedway this weekend. So I'm going to get right on into this and bring Reverend Joe on to the show tonight and get this thing started. Reverend Joe, how are you doing tonight?
Not too bad, Steve. Sounds like you're doing better.
Oh, I'm doing a whole lot better. 2 weeks of nasty whatever I had. And last week I didn't have much of a voice and I had to kind of push through it. But this week I'm doing a whole lot better. Unfortunately, Tim's the one this week that we've had to kind of sideline him and give him the night off.
Right. Well, I'm glad he's doing better. This thing started.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get this thing started out here.
Lord, we come before you, and we thank you for the fact that Steve's feeling better, and we ask you, please, to heal up Tim, get him feeling better. We thank you for a good weekend of racing. And no one getting hurt. Nothing major going on. We pray for those people that got hit in that car accident. I believe it was in the parking lot. But be with them. We ask you to be with all of us involved. We ask you to be with our soldiers all over the world and all those that put on a uniform to protect us. Protect them and keep them safe. And we thank you for all this in the mighty name of Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. Amen.
And I thank you. I appreciate it for coming on here tonight. I don't know where Tim keeps most of this stuff at here in the video, so I'm just kind of winging this thing tonight. I'm going to do away with the national anthem tonight because I can't find it in the list. Tim's usually the one that controls all of this, so I'm just trying to wing this thing. I know we've got Phoenix coming up here, not this weekend, but the weekend following that. I think you're going to be up at Phoenix at the Truck Series, Xfinity Series, and Sprint Cup Series. They're going to cut everybody off in those three National Series events, and they're going to send them into Homestead the week following out there. I think you said something just last week or week prior that you're going to head out there to Phoenix International. Been quite some time since we've been out there, and one thing coming out of Phoenix already today is that they have pushed back the Camping World Truck Series event from the 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time start time to 10 o'clock p.m. So it's going to be a little bit of a late race for them out there on the West Coast. Not so much for you. It's going to be 6:30 your time out there, I believe it is. So you guys will, or 6 o'clock, so you guys will be able to enjoy an early night where us over here on the West Coast, on the East Coast, are going to have to kind of dig in for a long night of racing out there in the Camping World Truck Series.
Yes, it will be, but the good thing is we camp in the campground there, which is only on the backside of the track, so it's not so bad like we have to get in traffic and try to get back to a hotel or whatever. So it's going to be an interesting weekend, actually. We're leaving Thursday to go down to California, take care of some doctor's appointments and other business, and then we'll be heading to Phoenix the following week, and from Phoenix back to California, one more doctor's appointment, and then heading back to Washington State. But it's going to be an interesting week, and we will definitely give you a report on that, get you all the latest from there. And look forward to that. So we will talk to you next week, and hopefully we'll be back to full force.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. Cam's getting better. Suzanne said a little bit earlier that he's feeling a whole lot better today than he was yesterday. So definitely we'll all be back together next week. Before I cut you out of here, let everybody know where they can follow you out on social media, what you guys got going on, when you're going to be in Phoenix, and I'll let you get out of here for the night.
People can reach me at 951-232-7630, and that's my cell phone, which will reach me anywhere. Our webpage is ontrackwithjesus.org. I mentioned it last week, and in the left-hand column, there's a thing that says Good Shop. If you click on that, anything you buy from that site, which is all your normal websites to buy from, we'll get a small percentage of that donated to the ministry. And my email address is ontrackwithjesus@aol.com. Look forward to hearing from you.
Reverend, I appreciate you taking the time to come on here tonight. And you have a great night, and we'll talk to you next week from all of us. Take care.
All righty. Take care.
And that's our Reverend Joe coming on the show tonight. Like I said, Tim is out here tonight. I'm taking over the show. I'm going to be hosting this all by myself. I've got Suzanne sitting over here in the screening room. And I've got Chris Knight coming up here in just a little while from catchfence.com. He's going to come on here. We're going to talk a little bit about Martinsville this past weekend, what we've got coming up at Texas this weekend. And we're really getting down to the chase with all three series, really. Season's almost over with 33 races into the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series season. So it's becoming crunch time out here. This past weekend, obviously, at Martinsville Speedway, the shortest track on the circuit, a lot of action out there from those guys that came through. NASCAR Camping World Truck Series, as I said, they started off their round of six for them in the Texas Roadhouse 200 out there. Johnny Sauter, three-time winner out there at Martinsville Speedway. This is his third victory there at the track, running for GMS Racing. Those guys, brand new team. He came over there from Thor Sport from 2015, 2016, brand new team for him. And they've put up their third victory. Well, he's put up his third victory already at Martinsville Speedway in the second one of this season. He's locked himself into Homestead just in 2 weeks. So he's got Texas and Phoenix that not necessarily he has to worry too much about. But there's a lot of guys that are sitting at the back out of this. William Byron, Matt Kraft, and Ben Kennedy, they're all fighting for that final four that will go into Homestead here in just a couple of weeks. Johnny Sauter, Christopher Bell, and Timothy Peters sitting up at the very top with only 8 points separating those three drivers coming out of the Texas Roadhouse 200 at Martinsville. A lot of action there this past weekend with the Camping World Truck Series and those guys there at Martinsville. One of the things that you have to look at is that Ben Kennedy obviously kept running into issues in the event. It caused him some problems. He ended up being able to recover from that, finishing 18th, but it really has put a little bit of a damper on his championship hopes here in 2016. He's running at the very back of this round of six right now, so 21 points out from first. He needs about 12 points to get up there, 11, 12 points to get up there into the top four that will guarantee him a spot. Heading into Homestead here in just a couple of weeks, but we've got Texas and we've got Phoenix coming up. Ben Kennedy's winning earlier this season already at Bristol Motor Speedway for his first win out there. And that GMS, again, another GMS racing team that has been doing fairly well. So I'm going to listen a little bit to what, those guys had to say out there with Christopher Bell, Chase Elliott, your second place finisher, and Johnny Sauter, your eventual winner out there. I'm just going to listen to just a little bit here from the Media Center at Martinsville Speedway, and we will be right
back.
Okay,
if we could have your attention, please. We are now joined by our runner-up finisher, Chase Elliott, driver of the number 71 Napa Auto Parts Valvoline Chevrolet. Chase, starting from the pole today, really great race out there. If you could just kind of talk us through your afternoon and how you're feeling.
Yeah, it was a really, really strong truck. I was glad we were able to run today. I hope it helps for tomorrow. It was obviously a little different, I think, driving these things than what it'll be in the cup race tomorrow. But regardless, it was good to get some laps and try to get better at this place. This has been an absolute struggle for me. So I'm just trying to figure out whatever it takes to go fast, and especially when it comes tomorrow, that's the most important thing. So we obviously wish we had done something a little different there at the end to try to get by Johnny, but had to have a little respect, I feel like, for him racing for a championship and whatnot. You don't want to make a mistake and end his day and end his championship too. So you got to be mindful of that stuff.
Okay, we'll now open it up for questions for Chase. If you have a question, please raise your hand. We will get a microphone to you. Okay, we'll take a question in the back from Stan.
Chase, Stan Creekmore with Outside the Box. What was the biggest thing you learned about this track today that you think will help you tomorrow?
Well, I think it's kind of a number of things, Stan. I don't know that it's one thing in particular. The biggest thing that comes to my mind is just getting in a rhythm, and it's tough to do at this place, and it's just very much so not like any short track I've grown up racing at or had an opportunity to go to very much. So the past few races here, you know, have been kind of the first time I've been to one of these, you know, high break, you know, really slow center of the corner speed short tracks. So it's just very different from what I feel like I've been accustomed to in years past with late model racing and whatnot. So for me, just trying to find a rhythm at this place is important. And obviously, I think the Cup car wants a little bit different driving style, a little bit different technique tomorrow. But, you know, at the same time, I just think that those laps and that rhythm, even if it isn't something different, we're still driving around the same racetrack and it's still paved. So at the end of the day, I think it's got to be similar.
Okay, we'll take our next question from Chris and then go up to the press box.
Chris Knight, catchment.com. Chase, it's been 3 years since you've been in a truck. Had a pretty good truck today. Would you like to do it more often and maybe even Phoenix?
No, not really. You know, I think if I... If I feel like we can go somewhere and learn something from racing a truck race or something, then sure. You know, I think this is a really good place to do that. I feel like, you know, you're not, you know, the aero side is not as different when it, you know, comes to like a mile and a half or something like that. So I think, you know, a short track is good to do this kind of stuff at. But no, unless it really is going to help either myself or our team learn something new, then not really. I'd rather just focus on our other stuff.
Okay, go ahead in the press box with your question. Okay, we'll give them a minute. We'll take our next question down here from Barry.
We got it. Sorry. Press box.
Okay, go ahead.
I shouldn't say my name now. Greg Engel, CupScene.com. Chase, genuinely, you seem to have a great truck. What was weighing on your mind there at the end more heavily? Was it the last time you were in a truck in Canada and that somewhat controversial finish? Was it the fact that these guys are racing for a chase? Or you know, because it seemed like you could have probably come up there and forced the issue. Or was it in those final laps? Did you really not have enough to catch him there at the end? What was the scenario there?
Yeah, I felt like our trucks were pretty evenly matched. Be honest with you, and I felt like that. I felt like our truck was a little better than his real late in the going, and I felt like he started to fall off some of those last handful of laps. But no, I wasn't really concerned with the last truck races I've run. But you know, you live and you learn as you go through life and learn through racing. So I think you just got to be mindful of what he's racing for. You know, sure, you can go move him out of the way and you know, try to win the race that way, I guess, or whatever it takes. You can also make a mistake and wreck the guy pretty easily doing that. So, you know, for me, I had to kind of sit back and recognize the reason I'm here today is to try to learn for tomorrow. I'd love to have one of those clocks to put in my house, but at the same time, I'd much rather have it on a Sunday. So if this you know, helps us for tomorrow, then I think that's the most important thing. And it's much harder to go and pass a guy up off the corner and not, you know, run into him getting in. So definitely live and you learn as you go through life. But I think that was the biggest thing.
Go ahead, Barry.
And that was Chase Elliott out there in the media center following the Texas Roadhouse 200 at Martinsville Speedway. He was just like the first finisher out there behind Johnny Sauter. Johnny Sauter was coming up just a little bit later in that interview, but we got people are moving here. The NASCAR Sprint Cup Series also out there at Martinsville Speedway with their round of eight, the first round of eight in this cutoff scenario out there. Some of the discussions here with the 29 laps that it took to get scoring settled out there this past weekend with the new scoring loops that they have, and obviously the caution coming out in the middle of a green flag pit cycle out there. And we'll talk, like I said, just a little bit about that with Chris here in just a few minutes when he gets on here. But Jimmy Johnson out there locking himself in, 7 out there in the 2016. NASCAR Sprint Cup campaign for him. You know, Jimmy Johnson has been around the sport for a long time. He's just over 40 years old at this point. And obviously, he's in peak condition as far as continuing out there and winning these races. This is his 95th. And his drivers that Ellen Kevin Harvick, you know, Brad Keselowski, that have already been knocked out after last weekend or the weekend following at Talladega Super Speedway. Johnson, he was able to run. Only 92 laps in the race. He's been very dominant when he went to a track like Martinsville Speedway. His victories, Matt Kenseth, Kyle Busch running out the top five of those. Just racing, yet again, seems to be dominant in the field of those three drivers. Carl Edwards has four laps now. He ended up finishing fairly a little ways back in 36 for them. So, you know, Joe Gibbs Racing and their effort continues in the 2016 season. But, and I've got Chris on here. Talk a little bit about Martinsville Speedway.
Hello.
Chris, you there?
Hi, Steven.
Hey, how's it going tonight?
I'm good, bud. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Martinsville Speedway this past weekend, first thing I want to obviously get into, and a lot of things, first thing that are on most people's mind is the 29 laps that it took to get the scoring correct out there. Martinsville Speedway obviously adding in extra scoring loops on pit road this year to 12 scoring loops. How much of that did you think really played a factor into it in those 29 laps that it took to get the scoring correct?
I'm not sure that the extra scoring lines played into a factor about what happened at Martinsville Speedway as much as it did that the caution came out during green flag pit stops. Look, this isn't the first time we've seen this problem happen in NASCAR this season, and likely won't be the last. But did NASCAR learn something from this? Absolutely, they did. But I think at this point, I'd rather them spend and click off the laps and get the lineup right than to waste laps and go back to green and get the lineup wrong and wind up giving guys points that maybe should not have gotten an extra position or two, because when it all comes down to it, Steven, points are everything.
Yeah, and you go back in the 1990 first Union 400 at North Wilkesboro Speedway where Darrell Waltrip was leading over Kenny Wallace, but the pace car picked up Brett Bodine out there, and this was before the advent of digital scoring that they now have in all three series. So, you know, when NASCAR obviously learns for some of these things, with Steve O'Donnell, they come out and he said that if we would have known how long it would have taken, we would have red flagged this event. I think you're right in the aspect that NASCAR has to get this correct. They have to get it right the first time because we're in crunch time at this point. We only have three more races left in this year.
Yeah, and it wasn't all NASCAR's fault, in my opinion. I was sitting up at the press box at Martinsville Speedway, and I saw drivers trying to take advantage of everything that was going on. While NASCAR was trying to get the line of Corette, I saw drivers inching their way forward and getting into new positions and going through, you know, taking lining up next to another driver, trying to get every position they could. And then, in fact, I saw drivers pass the leader of the race and to try to get a lap back. And while two of them got caught, Kyle Larson and Trevor Bayne, there was a number of drivers that actually got away with it and got themselves a lap back free, courtesy of the scoring situation. So there's a lot that could be learned from the scoring situation. Obviously, I think next time this happens, NASCAR will definitely throw the red flag and look at their video and their timing scoring loops and look at everything that's available to them to get it right. But like I said, I think in the end of the day, they got it right. And I know there was a lot of confusion about, you know, there was two drivers, Casey Mears was one of them, where they lined up fifth and sixth. How is that possible that a fifth and sixth place car on the restart were two or three laps down and they restarted near the front of the pack? Well, you just have to go back to the rules about when you have free pass cars and you have cars that are at the tail end of the lead lap and then you have penalty cars. But I think NASCAR did a great job on getting it right, even though it took longer than we all wanted to. In the end, I think it was for the best.
Yeah, obviously, most definitely. And, you know, 29 laps sounds like a lot of laps, but, I mean, when you're running even at pace car speed, 45 seconds around a half-mile track out there like Martinsville, I mean, it takes a fair few amount of laps, but, you know, we can discuss that all night long. You know, Jimmy Johnson, he's winning ninth time out there at Martinsville Speedway. He's locked himself in coming into Homestead in just 2 weeks away from now. His drive for seven is alive in 2016. How much of that does it play into a factor that kind of shows that Hendrick Motorsports is starting to make a curve and starting to get back to the front and beat some of these guys like Joe Gibbs Racing, which three of them finished almost right behind him?
Yeah, I'm not so sure Hendrick Motorsports had this in the bag all along, and they were just sandbagging through the summer months. I know there was a media concern across the NASCAR board, whether it was in the garage area or in the stands, or even from the media standpoint on whether or not Hendrick Motorsports was going to get it into high gear and get going. But, man, when I tell you what, Steven, when the chase started at Chicagoland Speedway, that speed that we looked for and expected from the Hendrick Motorsports camp all summer long was right there, and they haven't lost any momentum or any steam. So, obviously, Hendrick Motorsports may have been the sleeper during the summer months, really doing their homework to make sure that they were going to be bigger and better and ready to compete for this championship. And, obviously, we've seen that with Jimmy Johnson.
Well, I mean, historically, when you take a look at Jimmy Johnson, every time that there is a change within the format of the chase, it always seems that that team and Chad Canal take two or three seasons or one or two seasons there to get acclimated to the new roles. And I think that you're now starting to see them come to the cream of the crop. Joe Gibbs Racing, three drivers, like I said, they finished right behind him. Carlo was just having another bad day out there in his roller coaster year. You know, when you start looking at Joe Gibbs Racing out there, they have come right over from 2015. You know, obviously, Martin Truex Jr. with their affiliate team got knocked out at Talladega the week prior. What do some of these teams, like the Hendrick Motorsports that have been the top of the pyramid, the cream of the crop over the years, do to kind of catch up with some of those guys?
Well, I don't know necessarily whether or not what they do. I just think that they spend – a lot of time utilizing the resources they have available to them, whether it's pull down rigged, you know, some testing that's available to them, and then also wind tunnel time. And there's just a lot of things that these companies are willing to do to try to get that extra advantage. And look, when you have a manufacturer like Toyota who is eager to win championships and willing to do whatever it costs to get it done, Joe Gibbs Racing took advantage of that, and they obviously were the team to beat through the spring and summer months. But when getting into this championship, it's a different story because, you know, Ford and Chevrolet were also backpedaling and doing their homework. They weren't as fast during the summer months when it seemed like it had to count. But when you're Jimmy Johnson and Joey Logano and you have a win in your bag, you're able to step aside and put things aside and go focus on that championship later in the season while Toyota was gleaming in the spotlight during the regular season. So these Toyotas are going to be fast. You know, Carl Edwards has a big hole to climb out of. Is it possible? Absolutely, it's possible. But it's a big hole to find. But I wouldn't count out one, if not two, JGR cars making it all the way down to Homestead for the Championship Four.
And how much of a shock and how much of a surprise do you think it is that both Brad Keselowski and Martin Truex Jr. too is arguably probably the most dominant when they come in and win races throughout the year? You look at the Coke 600, you look at what he did at Chicagoland, you look what he did at New Hampshire. Well, how much of a shock is it that you see what those two teams have done, and yet they're not sitting there getting to be able to contend when we go to Homestead or even any round of eight?
Yeah, I have a lot more sympathy when it comes to those – between those two. I have a lot more sympathy for someone like Martin Truex Jr., who really couldn't control what happened to him. He was just running along there. He won the pole and had a strong car, and then out of nowhere – the engine blows on his Furniture Oil Racing Toyota, and he's singing the song, singing the blues. You know, he's done for the season. But if someone like Brad Keselowski is concerned, his fate was in his own hands. When he had that debris get on his car, he should have done something within the first or second couple laps. You know, they waited an awful long time to get that debris off there, and unfortunately, they waited too long because it wound up cooking their motor, and Brad Keselowski, who had the car to beat, no doubt in my mind, was anybody going to beat Brad Keselowski, and they wound up beating themselves, and beating themselves wound up taking them out of the hunt for the championships. There's no reason, you know, there were still plenty of laps for Brad to get back to the front. They really should have allowed Ryan Blaney to get the lead and get that debris off within the first couple laps of them noticing it there, instead of waiting as long as they did and allowing the motor to overheat and then eventually blow.
You know, Joe Logano, on the flip side of all of this, is still in the hunt. He came into Martinsville last year and got knocked out with the incident with him and Matt Kenseth. They seem to put this whole thing to the side, but now Joey Logano seems to be the one that is going to have to take the flag for Penske Motorsports out there and run this thing all the way down to the championship. You know, Ford needs to come through. They need to do something because in the last couple of years, they've kind of been lackluster. We've seen it all when they announced earlier this year that they were going to bring Stuart Haas Racing on from Chevrolet to Ford. You know, they're looking to get back to the top. And, you know, Penske is already at the top. We've seen what Joey Logano can do. We've seen what Brad Keselowski can do. But when you start throwing these other teams into the fold in 2017, where does Joey Logano Ryan Blaney and Brad Keselowski and those three Penske and Penske affiliate teams then start to fit in out?
Well, I think they're still relevant. I think they have speed. Doug Yates and Roush Yates Motors are obviously doing a great job building some great engines. Ryan Blaney has had a solid year, maybe not a great year where we expected him to hopefully contend for a victory or two, but he's had a very solid rookie year in the Sprint Cup, and I think his future will only get brighter. But as far as Joey Logano is concerned, he may be the sleeper in this chase. Obviously, he won at Talladega, and that advanced him to the next round without any issue. But, you know, he may be a favorite this weekend at Texas Motor Speedway, and obviously we know Harvick is obviously the number one favorite at Phoenix. But if Joey Logano – look, there's still going to be one guy that points their way into this thing, and Joey Logano looks to be that guy. And obviously after what he experienced last year, that would be sweet redemption for him. And when it comes to Homestead and Joey Logano's aggressive driving style, and you got someone like Todd Gordon, as smart as he is and aggressive as he can be on the setups, Joey Logano may be the sleeping dog in this Sprint Cup Series chase. It wouldn't surprise me if those guys we get a late caution at Homestead and Joey's competing for the championship if he makes a move and winds up stealing it from the other guys' thunder.
And switching gears over to the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series here, they're in their round of six here. They started off at Martinsville Speedway this past weekend. GM Racing, Johnny Sauter coming over there from Thor Sport. And you also got Ben Kennedy, who won at Bristol earlier this year. Ben Kennedy is a little bit farther down. He's got a hole to dig himself out of at this time. But when you start looking at GMS Racing as a whole and what they started to put together as a program, yet somebody like William Byron, who's won six times this year, what does GMS Racing have to do to beat somebody like Kyle Busch Motorsports and William Byron?
Well, I think when you got somebody like Joe Scheer Jr. and a guy like Johnny Sauter who's hungry for a championship and wants a championship, I think William Byron's in trouble. He's going to really need his match, and I think the difference between William Byron and Johnny Sauter right now is Johnny Sauter is assured to be in the championship four at Homestead, and William Byron is not. We've seen it in the past. Look, Keselowski and Truex are two of the guys in the Sprint Cup Series who had the most wins this season, and they're not going to be in the final round of the championship playoffs. So I think Johnny Sauter, and Joe Scheer Jr. really are breathing a sigh of relief. They said at Martinsville Speedway last weekend they were going to win, and that's exactly what they did do, and they did it in a dominating way. And I think when you put a potent combination like those two together, they're going to try some things this weekend at Texas, which I think that they'll see if it's going to work at Homestead. But they're very confident in the equipment that they're bringing over the next couple weeks. And I wasn't surprised to see Johnny Sauter try to win the next two races to try to keep some of these drivers making the championship four.
Well, let's take a look at, you know, Timothy Peters out here at Red Horse Racing. He's the only driver in the top six that does not have a win. He has had to point himself all the way in, but he seemed to be like the silent driver out there in this crop already in the Camping World Truck Series. You know, when they have put together this program this year, Timothy Peters, he did not win at Talladega. He was the driver that had won the two previous events already there. He didn't do so. And they've had to continue moving on, obviously, with less resources than some of the other teams that are sitting in the top six. What does Red Horse Racing have to continue to do? He's third in points right now. Does Timothy Peters continue to be that silent driver that sits there and methodically stays in the points hunt? Or should he be the aggressive driver that should go out there and try and beat somebody like a Christopher Bell or a William Byron or a Matt Crafton?
Well, we saw Timothy Peters be very aggressive at Talladega Super Speedway. And it wound up working to his benefit while it wound up kicking some guys out of the championship. The championship hopes. You know, Timothy was involved in igniting the big one at Talladega Super Speedway. You can't necessarily fault him for being aggressive like he was. He was just doing what you need to do at Talladega Super Speedway. But as far as Timothy Peters is concerned, he just has to go out there and try to win. Texas Motor Speedway is another track where Red Horse should be considered someone to be a threat to win. You never count out a guy like Peters. He's got an experienced crew chief in Shane Huffman who knows how to build fast trucks and go fast. So I think if those two can hit the right combination, they might be a viable threat for this weekend's NASCAR Camping World Truck Series race at Texas Motor Speedway. But, you know, here's the thing about Red Horse Racing. There was some concern about whether or not they were going to have the speed to be a factor in this championship or even a factor to get into the playoff system. But when Brett Moffitt scored that huge win at Michigan International Speedway, it really seemed to ignite that Red Horse Racing team. And Peters has been able to deliver constant finishes since. So, when it comes to the veterans, I don't think you can count Timothy Peters out, but there's still some hungry guys behind him when you look at Matt Crafton, William Byron, Christopher Bell, Ben Kennedy also trying to get in the mix. There's several guys that are really trying to make themselves a part of this championship chase, and it's going to be interesting to see who's in and who's out.
And over in the NASCAR Xfinity Series, we're going to bring them into the fold this weekend also. They're coming down to the end of their deal, too, halfway through their round. And you take a look at Elliott Sadler, somebody that not even but 2 or 3 months back, he didn't know what was going to happen in 2017. A sponsor ended up deciding at the late last minute that they were going to reverse course, come back on board for 2017. He signed on, and he's good to go for 2017. But when you look at him, he's got 3 wins already this year. He's over 40 years old. Obviously, he's a driver that can still win, but at some point, he's going to start thinking about long-term on how much longer he's going to be into this series. And you've got young drivers right behind him. Daniel Suarez for Joe Gibbs Racing. And really just a surprise, Blake Koch, who's sitting in third, who's just been able, again, like Timothy Peters in the Camping World Truck Series, he's been a driver that's been able to point himself in all the way through with Carlin Grace and a brand-new team in 2016 here. So when you start looking at those top three, what strikes you as the most – what is different about this in the Xfinity Series?
Well, there's different things about all three series teams. You look at Elliott Sadler, who's hungry for a championship, knows how to race towards a championship and be around for the end. You know, we've seen him lose the championship several years ago, and it killed him. And I think he wants nothing more than to be a part of that championship four at Homestead. And then he has someone like Daniel Suarez, who really has come into his own with 2 victories this season in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. He's definitely, without a doubt, the future stars of Joe Gibbs Racing in the Xfinity and Sprint Cup Series. I think he'll make it there. And, you know, his determination and his eagerness to willing to go out and please and do right for his sponsors, Aris, and obviously to wave that Mexican flag. I don't think Daniel Suarez can be counted out of the mix. And then you have someone like Blake Cook, who really this team, College Racing, didn't form until January 2016. But when you have someone experienced like Chris Rice on top of the box and having an affiliation with Richard Childress Racing, they've done what they needed to do to make sure that they have put themselves in position all year long. And that's the biggest fixture for Blake Cook and College Racing, is that they've been around all year long. They haven't wrecked out of a lot of races. They finished a lot of races. And when they finished races, they may not necessarily have been in the top 10, but they've been in the top 15. And that type of consistency has been has given them that edge and that perseverance to move on. And there was a lot of good guys that got knocked out of the first round. Ty Dillon is one of those guys, and then you see someone like Blake Cook and College Racing make it on to the next round, and you just can't help wonder if he's going to be the Cinderella story in this chase, kind of like what Martin Truex Jr. was last year for the Sprint Cup Series. It would be a hell of a story to see if Blake Cook and that 18 could take it all the way, or that 11 team that could take it all the way.
And Chris, I know I just got you just for a couple more minutes, but the final thing I just want to cover here really quickly is NASCAR announcing that Sprint Cup Series drivers full-time with 5 years or more in that will not be able to come back over into the Xfinity Series and the Camping World Series, but 10 times in Xfinity and 7 times in trucks. How much of that does it make a difference to those two series?
I mean, it's going to make a difference. It's just going to determine how big of a difference, and I think that's to be determined. You know, when you're thinking of someone like Team Penske, who's had that 22 car has been a full-time car in this year, and they've had Keselowski in it a lot, and Logano in it a lot. Those guys aren't going to be eligible to compete in more than 10 races apiece next year, and they won't be, they won't be able to compete in the championship when they get into the chase for the championship. Those guys won't be available around, so that's going to open the door for someone like Ryan Blaney, who has that Team Penske affiliation, to be in a seat, and it may open some doors for someone like Austin Cindric, who I think has a bright future ahead within the Penske group, to take that 22 seat. So I think it's going to open some doors for some young guys, some new meat, some new fresh talent within all three of the series, the Sprint Cup, the Xfinity, and the truck. Who and when is going to be to be determined, but I'm interested to see how the sponsors react to this, because we know the sponsors love to have these Sprint Cup Series guys racing on Saturdays from time to time in order to cater their customers. So I think it's going to be a work in progress. NASCAR Nation is kind of mixed on it. Some fans love it, some fans hate it, some drivers love it, some drivers hate it. So I think it's going to be one of those things that we're going to have to keep a close eye on and see what the entry lists look like next season. But one thing is for sure, it seems like NASCAR is really going in the right direction to make each of these series between the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series and NASCAR Xfinity Series independent of themselves, and letting truly these drivers stand out and shine and enjoy the moment. And you've got to applaud NASCAR for that.
Last question, and I'll let you get out of here. When you got 2 weeks left, you got Texas this weekend, Phoenix the following weekend, all three series in action both times before we get to Homestead in late November. What's your prediction?
I don't know. That's a good question, because, you know, I expected to go to Martinsville this weekend, and I thought the truck race would be all heck would break loose, and it didn't happen. We had some slam bam. We had some fenders rubbing and some tempers flaring, but nothing like what I thought we would see. And the same thing with the cup race. I mean, we saw a little bit of tempers and frustration and some angers, but I felt like these races were relatively calm. I think that Texas this weekend could either be real calm or it could be real dicey. And we could see something like we've seen the last couple years. It's just going to be hard to say. I think as the championship four race gets closer, Homestead inches closer. I know we only got 2 weeks before that happens, but I think some drivers will go into desperation mode if they find themselves outside on the outside looking in, and if they find themselves in desperation mode, whether it's the trucks, Xfinity, or Cup, I think, Steven, that could produce some of the best racing we've seen all season long.
Well, Chris, I appreciate you taking the time to come on here tonight, talk a little bit about NASCAR and all three series. I will see you in Homestead here in just a couple of weeks, but before we let you get out of here, we'll do the same thing we do for the drivers. So come on, let everybody know where they can follow your work, where they can get you out on social media. Appreciate you taking the time, and you have a great night.
Yeah, thanks. Of course, you can find my work at catchfence.com and from NASCAR Wire Service. With working with my counterpart, Reed Spencer. And then, of course, I'm at Niter01 on Twitter. And I appreciate you having me on, bud. And I look forward to seeing you at Homestead in a couple weeks.
Thanks a lot. You take care.
All right, you too.
And that was Chris Knight with CatchFence.com. He a lot of work for so many different drivers out there. And not only the drivers, but putting together so much great work out there at CatchFence.com, NASCAR Wire Service. I do appreciate him taking time to come in here tonight, talk a little bit about NASCAR. We're going to take just a little bit of a break here real quick, and we're going to be back right on the other side of that break and get you guys ready for Texas Motor Speedway this weekend. Just a couple minutes. And
well, it's a long way to Richmond, rolling north on 95. Shotgun and a pistol by my side, tearing down that highway like a modern day Bonnie and Clyde. We met at a truck stop, Johnson City, Tennessee.
This isn't just a race. This is the championship at Homestead Miami Speedway. There are no shortcuts, no excuses, no participation trophies. The only thing racing faster than the championship for is your pulse. Because when it comes to the championship, nothing else matters. It's time! The NASCAR Sprint Cup Series Championship Ford EcoBoost 400. November 20th. Call 866-409-RACE or visit homesteadmiamispeedway.com.
Live back here in the pit stop with Tim Spain. I'm your host tonight, Steve Wilson. As I said earlier in the show, Tim's a little bit sidelined. I hope he gets better and he'll be back with us next Tuesday night. But we're going to go ahead and end the show out here real quick with the schedule for this weekend out there in Texas Motor Speedway. All three of the NASCAR National Series will be in action this weekend. Starting on Friday at 6:45 Eastern Standard Time, we've got NASCAR. We've got NASCAR Camping World Truck Series qualifying to be followed at 6:45 NASCAR Sprint Cup Series qualifying. 8:30 p.m., we've got the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series under the lights out there at Texas Motor Speedway for 147 laps, 220.5 miles for them. Then on Saturday afternoon, qualifying for the NASCAR Xfinity Series, 11:45 a.m., with the NASCAR Xfinity Series race to follow at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 200 laps, 300 miles for them. And then on Sunday, we're going to close out the weekend from Texas Motor Speedway with the Texas AAA 500, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 334 laps, 501 miles for those guys out there chasing that championship, two to go with Texas Motor Speedway and Phoenix before we cut them off and head into Homestead, Miami to round this season out. I'd like to thank Tim, Suzanne, Anne-Marie, everybody that comes on and puts this show together every single week. You can follow me at Speedway Digest on Twitter, facebook.com/Speedway Digest, and SpeedwayDigest.com. We'll have everything up there covering the weekend event out there. Again, thank you, everybody, for coming on, listening tonight. Thanks to Chris. I appreciate it. And we will talk to you next week. Stop Radio.